Issues Etc. is listener-supported. We rely on you for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Now, if you appreciate Issues Etc., please consider making a tax-deductible gift today. You can make a secure online contribution at issuesetc.org. You can also donate by check. Make your check payable to Issues Etc. and send it to Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Thanks for your support.
The hymn, The King of Love, My Shepherd, is sung by the choir of King's School. Probably next to the crucifix, the image that has emerged historically as the most enduring, the most ubiquitous, the most powerful, most endued with meaning of our Savior is that of the Good Shepherd. You'll see it in stained glass, in painting, in sculpture, everywhere. There he is, staff in hand, usually sheep at his feet, one perhaps on his shoulder or in his arms. The image of the Good Shepherd is one chosen by Jesus himself, and it has obviously a strong connection to the shepherd imagery of the Old Testament. Is it just an accident of history that this image has endured and emerged for the church as one of the most powerful ones of Christ? Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in on this Thursday afternoon, the 8th of May. Dr. Ken Bailey joins us here for the first hour. We're going to talk about Jesus the Good Shepherd. A little bit later, Dr. Alvin Schmidt will be alongside. We're going to hear his 2013 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference presentation, Making the Case Against Islam, in Hour 2 of Issues Etc. Joining us to talk about Jesus the Good Shepherd, Dr. Ken Bailey. He's author and lecturer in Middle Eastern New Testament studies. Spent 40 years living and teaching New Testament in Egypt, Lebanon, Jerusalem, and Cyprus. He's author of several books, including his latest, The Good Shepherd, A 2,000-Year Journey from Psalm 23 to the New Testament. Dr. Bailey, welcome back.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Is it just an accident of history that this image that we find all over the place in Christendom, in art, in hymn, even in the woven into the liturgy of Christ as shepherd, is it just an accident of history that that one has taken such prominence?
No, I don't think it's an accident of history at all. In our Middle Eastern world, with the traditional village life, the land in the Holy Land, the land and also elsewhere, but click up into Syria and down into Egypt, but particularly in the Holy Land and off into Jordan and into Lebanon and Syria, where I lived 47 years of my life, the traditional village, everybody has got to have a few sheep. And the point being that this provides your winter clothing. It also provides both milk and meat. And it provides leather. So there's an awful lot of products from the sheep that are important. And every family has to have them because you can't afford to have somebody herd three or four sheep. But by the time you put everybody who lives on your alley together, why, you've got a group big enough, 50, 60, 70, 100. And then some, either young man or two young women, will take over the responsibility of herding the sheep, and they take them out to the countryside every day because nobody has any hay in a barn somewhere that they can pull out, and there are no fenced pastures. All the land that you can farm is land that produces food, because most of the countryside is either desert or it's mountainous, and you can't grow food on it. So it's the steppe, the wilderness, where you can't get enough water to grow anything, but there's a little bit of grass grow, and sheep can eat it, and they'll turn it into protein. Everybody's got to have sheep. So every family, thereby every person, understands the whole world that evolves around a good shepherd and his sheep. And thereby, it's a total natural, both in the Old Testament and in the New Testament, to think of God in terms of the good shepherd, and then in the New Testament, Jesus as the good shepherd. It was their life.
Does it begin, at least in chronological terms, in the biblical account, does it actually begin with Psalm 23? Is that the first time we have this image? And I always note that it's nestled up next to Psalm 22, about the crucifixion. But
right.
There it is, Psalm 23, taking its prominence. Is that where it begins, Dr. Bailey?
Well, it begins in the sense that you've got the casual reference to sheep and shepherds all the way through the Bible. But what I looked for in my book was this collection of ideas where you get a good shepherd, and he is the shepherd of a flock. One sheep is lost. He goes after it. He brings it back at whatever cost, and then has a party. Well, that collection of ideas definitely begins in Psalm 23. It's then picked up in Jeremiah, in Ezekiel, in Zechariah, and picked up five times in the New Testament.
What makes a good shepherd, by that framework that you just discussed, what makes the good shepherd good?
Well, first of all, I mean, he does all sorts of things. He has a gentle call, and he walks slowly out in front of the sheep, and he gives that call, and it's about 10 seconds. I've met many up in the mountains of Lebanon and in the hill country of Judea on the West Bank. I have met sheep with their shepherds and have watched them and talked to them. And they bad shepherds take a stick and drive their sheep from the back, and they throw stones at them. But a good shepherd walks out in front, and the call sounds something like this. Okay, I'm one of your sheep. You're the shepherd. You just sang that. I recognize the voice, and we think that it's probably the timbre of the voice more than the tune. But the tune is also very important. Sometimes the shepherd uses a flute, in which case the timbre of the voice is irrelevant. It's the tune distinctively that is followed. Most of them just give this little call. The sheep recognize it, and they follow. So the shepherd is out front, a gentle call. They recognize that he's going to take care of them, and they follow him. You get out in the open country, and the only protection they have is the shepherd. There are wolves out there, and there are thieves out there. So you got two-legged threats, and you got four-legged threats. And their only hope for security is to stick with the shepherd. He also makes the decision as to where you can find something to eat, because he's got in the back of his head a computer that tells him, all the other shepherds are also out there. We had a little bit of rain a couple of weeks ago. They'll probably have some grass in such and such a valley. I got to get there before everybody else. On and on and on. And our tribe has agreements with other tribes. We can take our sheep here. We shouldn't take them there. He's going to find it. And then the shepherd also knows how to get them to water. They spend all morning eating. By about 2 o'clock in the afternoon, they need a drink very badly, and they need to rest. He knows where they can find water, and he knows where there's a quiet place, usually with some shade, where he can rest, and he knows how to get them home. So, I mean, they rely on the shepherd for absolutely everything. It's a perfect natural for the believer's belief in God as the good shepherd, which then transfers to believers in Christ and Christ the Good Shepherd.
So it is the image of faith in many ways, this kind of absolute dependence / receptivity on the part of the sheep, and it's an image of God's not only his providence but and protection and care, but of his love for the sheep.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, the good shepherds that I've talked to, you can see it in their eyes. I mean, they love those animals. And if push comes to shove, now they've got guns. But in the past, when they didn't have, all they had was a heavy stick, and you got a couple of wolves coming after you. And you know, you want somebody tough out there that's going to be able to beat off those wolves. And what if you get attacked by some robbers? I mean, the sheep know that this is the one guy that can protect them from the threats out there. And they also know that if they get lost, he's going to come after them. They know that. I picked up a very, very interesting story from a colleague, a mission colleague of mine who spent his life, he was somewhat older than I was, but he's gone now, but he spent his mission career in China, stuck around after the communists took over, was put under house arrest, and the communist ideologues came two or three times a week to try and talk him out of the Christian faith and tell him that, you know, Mao Zedong and Marx really had a hold of the stick at the right end, and this dum-dum Jesus didn't. And one of the major points that they tried to make was the Good Shepherd. They said, look, your story of the Good Shepherd says that the Good Shepherd, this is Luke 15, leaves the 99 behind in the wilderness, and he goes after the one. Now, this is stupid. It's the people. It's the mass. It's the larger grouping. It's the that matter. And if you lose one here and you lose one there, that isn't as important as taking care of the 99. Well, Dr. Roy would answer them and say, no, when the Good Shepherd goes after the one, he gives to the 99 the ultimate security, because they know, every one of them, if I get lost, he'll come after me. And if he doesn't go after the one, he gives to the 99 the ultimate insecurity. They know that if I step 3 feet out of line, he will leave me alone to die. And that was the way he answered that threat. And, of course, if he fails to go after them, then the whole flock is insecure.
Dr. Ken Bailey is our guest. We'll take a break here and continue on the other side with him talking about Jesus the Good Shepherd on this Thursday, May the 7th. I'm Todd Wilkin. Dr. Ken Bailey is author and lecturer in Middle Eastern New Testament Studies. He's author of several books, including his latest, The Good Shepherd, A Thousand-Year Journey from Psalm 23 to the New Testament. We'll continue that journey right after this.
People say that you should never link biblical as an adjective for archaeology because that biases your search. No, it doesn't.
Dr. Paul Meyer talking about his presentation at this summer's Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
This is simply limiting the purview of your archaeological interest, and that is, in the case of, well, biblical documents, have a wonderful field for archaeological research because more archaeology is taking place in Israel, I think, than anywhere else on Earth. Let me tell you about some of the tremendous finds that have been made, all of which confirm the biblical record.
You can meet and hear Dr. Paul Meyer making the case for biblical archaeology Friday, June 19th and Saturday, June 20th at the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference in Collinsville, Illinois. For more information, visit issuesetc.org or call 618-223-8385. Attendance is limited to 400. The Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference in Collinsville, Illinois.
Solid. Serious. Substantive. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Throughout the 50 days of Easter, sacred music for the world. LutheranPublicRadio.org. Listen 24/7 to sacred music for the Easter season. LPR, LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, email, Google+, simple ways that you can share Issues Etc. programs with your friends, relatives, and fellow parishioners. Just go to Listen on Demand Archives at issuesetc.org and look for the share feature images posted beneath each audio segment. You're only one click away from telling someone about Issues Etc. The Listen on Demand page at issuesetc.org and look for Share This.
Stanza 2 of the hymn, The King of Love, My Shepherd Is. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. We're talking about Jesus, the Good Shepherd. Dr. Ken Bailey is our guest, author and lecturer in Middle Eastern New Testament studies. He spent 40 years living and teaching New Testament in Egypt, Lebanon, Jerusalem, and Cyprus. And his latest book, The Good Shepherd, A Thousand-Year Journey from Psalm 23 to the New Testament. You can purchase this book at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Dr. Bailey, another question here on Psalm 23, and it's what is often viewed as kind of a mixing of metaphors. We start out with very strong pastoral images here of shepherd and sheep, and then near the end of the psalm, there are tables and there are cups. What's the connection there?
Well, it's important to notice that connection. There are people who try and argue that the whole thing is talking about sheep, but it really doesn't. It shifts in the middle. And it is a little bit peculiar, but obviously that's what David, under the inspiration of God, wanted us to hear. And so we really need to follow it exactly the way he presents it. And so he starts off with sheep and shepherd. The Lord is my shepherd; I shall not want. And as you've noted, even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, we're still talking about sheep and shepherd. Thou art with me sounds very much like Emmanuel. God is with us. Thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me. That's still a sheep looking at the shepherd who's carrying a rod with which he will beat off the attacker from the outside, and the staff with which he will guide the sheep on the inside. So he's going to take care of me from outside threats, and he'll help lift me up onto the path if I slip down into the stream. And then suddenly it shifts. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. And this is now the shepherd who is back home, and he's having a party. And he invites his friends to come to the party, and he has a nice big spread for them. And at the very end, it goes back to the shepherds again, to the hillside again. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life. Goodness, tov, ordinary word, mercy, chesed, covenant faithfulness. Not wolves and thieves and hyenas back lurking behind the flock, hoping to attack somebody who's slowed down a bit or has a sore leg. No, I'm followed by the goodness and mercy of God, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord. And the text of Scripture, the original Hebrew, says, to the length of the days. We translated either forever, that was King James, thinking, well, it means God's days, or some translations have said, my life long, meaning our days. But I think we should allow ourselves to imagine both, because Scripture leaves it open. It just says, medel ayam, the length of the days. And that's back to the house, back to where you're going to stay at night. So, no, it shifts in the middle, and we must allow ourselves to let our imagery shift. One is in the open countryside. One of them is a party back in the village.
You mentioned before that this is an image that is also found in the prophets, and I'd like to talk about the Good Shepherd in Jeremiah. What would you bring forth from that that treatment of God as Good Shepherd?
Well, in Jeremiah, Jeremiah lives, of course, some hundreds of years later, and he is writing at a time in which the nation is under threat, and he may be imprisoned, or at least under house arrest, and he knows that God has lifted his shalom, his peace, from the land because they're worshiping idols rather than worshiping God. They've broken their covenant with him, and that the Babylonians outside are going to win, and he's saying so, and he's giving the reason, so he's not popular at all. He's supposed to be fortifying the troops, and he's failing to do this. And so he picks up on the Good Shepherd image. And it's not an individual like it is with David. The Good Shepherd now has a problem, not just of a lost sheep. Oh, by the way, in Psalm 23, "Thou restoreth my soul," King James, really is nefshi yeshubib in Hebrew. He brings me back. Well, when he brings me back, that means that I was lost. I was wandering in the paths of unrighteousness. He goes after me. He finds me. He picks me up. He leads me back to the paths of righteousness. So Jeremiah picks up on that, and he says, our problem is not one lost sheep. Our problem is the whole nation is lost. And what on earth is going to happen? What is going to happen to us? Now, they're not completely lost in that Jerusalem has not fallen at the time he's writing, but he knows that they're going to. And the first evacuation, or the first roundup of the leaders of the nation taken off to Babylon have taken place, and now this is the second occasion in which they revolted against the Babylonians, and Jeremiah knows this is the end. It's the end of the state. It's the end of our worship system. We're going to end up slaves off in Babylon, and it's all over. What on earth is going to happen to us? Amazingly, Jeremiah, looking forward to that utter disaster, the greatest disaster the nation ever knew. And he projects a time in which God is going to come and round up the lost sheep and get them home. It's an incredible reusing of the image of the Good Shepherd and the lost sheep, and the Good Shepherd who goes after them and brings them home.
And it's made explicit there when he says the righteous branch from David's stem. This is, without a doubt, the heir of David's throne in Jeremiah's mind.
Of course. Yes, of course. But another thing that is really, really sort of very, very critical, and that's you get to verse 7 there in Jeremiah 23, and he says, "Therefore, behold, the days are coming when they shall no longer say, 'As the Lord lives, who brought the people up of Israel up out of the land of Egypt.'" When somebody wants to give an oath, they're not going to say, "I swear on the God of Israel who brought us up out of Egypt." No. What they're going to do is, when they want to make an oath and really prove you that what they're saying is true, they're going to say, "As the Lord lives, who brought up and gathered the offspring of the house of Israel out of the north country and out of all the countries where he had driven them." Namely, the return from Babylon is going to overshadow the return from Egypt. The Exodus isn't going to be that big a deal anymore. The return from Babylon is going to be the one that really matters. And of course, when they came back from Egypt, they had military, they wiped people out, their old villages were killed, and so on. And when they came back from Babylon, it was a quiet, gentle return, one family after another. They didn't displace anybody, they didn't kill anybody, they didn't have any ruthless military. It's a very different kind of a return. And Jeremiah says, that's the one, that's the return that matters. Amazing for a man who's probably under house arrest looking forward to the fall of the city of Jerusalem.
Can you speak briefly about the kind of the royal shepherd image here? And we had it here in the hymn that's come down to us. The King of Love, My Shepherd, is the,
yes,
the pairing of David's royalty and his line with that of the shepherd, obviously David taken from the flocks, you know, out from among the flocks. But
right,
what would you say of that?
Well, I would say, you know, in the Old Testament, all the way through, the four occasions 23rd Psalm, Jeremiah 23, Ezekiel 34, and Zechariah 10. All of them, the Good Shepherd is God, unquestioned. It's just, you know, the Lord is my shepherd, says David, and that pattern is unbroken. Well, if you take the Good Shepherd as God, that's fine. When God rounds up the flock and then turns things over to somebody else, this is a big deal. Not just turning it over, but the Good Shepherd goes from God to, well, what are you going to pick? It's going to be the highest and most noble and most glorious image you can imagine, and that is a son of David. And that's what what the prophets do.
What do we find there in Ezekiel 34?
Well, Ezekiel 34 is a biggie because now we're getting into the theme of the Good Shepherd is God, and he's going to come after the sheep, and it becomes all the richer and all the more powerful. And when we get to, let's see, let me find it here. Here we go. In Ezekiel, starting in verse 11. Through the prophet, God speaks to the people and says, "Behold, I myself will search for my sheep, and I will seek them out as a shepherd seeks out his flock when he is among his sheep that have been scattered. And I will seek out my sheep, and I will rescue them, and I will bring them out, and I will gather them." It's just over and over and over and over. "I myself will be the shepherd of my sheep, and I myself will make them lie down, and I will seek the lost, and I will bring back the strayed." Sort of the point being, don't think, now the people are in exile. It's all over. And they've been in exile for some years. And God is speaking through the prophet Ezekiel and saying to them, don't think that one more king of Israel is going to show up and he's going to straighten things out and we're going to get a better king than we had before who tried to pull political dirty tricks and, okay, we've given up on our worship of idols, fine, we'll worship the one true God, but all we're going to wait for is just that one of our own will stick his head up a bit and he'll get the leadership and then he will beat the Babylonians over the head and he'll get us home. And Ezekiel's answer is, no way. It's too serious. There's no way that we're going to come up with a king of Israel who's going to be able to do this. The only hope is that God himself comes, breaks into history, and rounds up the flock and gets them home. So this is the really, really important text of the projection of who the Good Shepherd is going to be that we find loud and clear in John 10, where Jesus says through John, "I am the Good Shepherd. The Good Shepherd lays down his life for the sheep." I don't think we should read it that way. I think we should read it, "I am the Good Shepherd." Okay, which one? Well, the one that's been promised for 1,000 years. And the one who has been promised for 1,000 years is that God himself is going to enter history and is going to round up the lost sheep. Well, that's great. And thereby, when Jesus starts making noises that he is the Good Shepherd, what is he affirming? Well, clearly he's affirming these Old Testament texts about the Good Shepherd being God, and that one day things are going to be so bad that God himself has to come and break into history and round up the flock. That's who I am. God is fulfilling those promises in my presence among the people. It's Christological. And so in the New Testament, you don't have to wait for Paul to come along some 30 years later and write Philippians, "He being in the form of God did not count equality with God a thing to be grasped, but emptied himself, taking upon himself the form of a servant, and being found in human likeness, became obedient unto death, even death upon a cross." And, you know, I was taught in seminary, boy, here is the high point of the Christology of the New Testament. Now, through my study of this image, I'm deeply convinced that Paul is simply reflecting the theology of Jesus. Yeah, sure, it's a high point. But the highest point is when Jesus himself picks up the image of the Good Shepherd and says, "Hey, guys and gals, in my presence, you have a fulfillment of these prophetic promises."
We're talking about Jesus, the Good Shepherd, on this Thursday, May the 7th. Dr. Ken Bailey is our guest. He's author of several books, including his latest, The Good Shepherd, A Thousand-Year Journey, From Psalm 23 to the New Testament. He's author and lecturer in Middle Eastern New Testament studies, spent 40 years living and teaching New Testament in Egypt, Lebanon, Jerusalem, and Cyprus. We'll be right back.
Organist Service, aptly abbreviated SOS, really has come to our rescue.
Pastor Jim Hollowatch of Christ Lutheran Church in Jackson, Mississippi.
With the ever-growing shortage of skilled musicians in our community, we were approaching a real crisis. But thanks to the Substitute Organist Service, help is always just minutes away. With its easy, intuitive interface, friendly customer service, and outstanding musicianship, you really couldn't ask for more.
You can find out more about the Substitute Organist Service at churchmusicsolutions.com.
T-shirts, shorts, sun. Get in shape this spring at Arch Fitness of Cottage Hills, Illinois. Arch Fitness offers adult boot camps on weekday evenings and on weekday and Saturday mornings. For more information, check out the Facebook fan page for Arch Fitness or call Kevin Reisick at 618-670-6952. Arch Fitness is located at 127 West MacArthur Drive in Cottage Hills, Illinois. Get A-Fit this spring at Arch Fitness of Cottage Hills, Illinois.
Do you wish your Lutheran school offered Latin, Greek, or logic? What about German or calculus? Right now, local Lutheran schools in two different states are utilizing Wittenberg Academy to expand their course offerings. Whether it's Latin for third graders or logic for seniors in high school, Wittenberg Academy can help. For your homeschooler or for your brick-and-mortar Lutheran school, we have solutions. To find out more, visit wittenbergacademy.org.
Greetings in Christ, and thank you for listening to Issues, etc. If you ever find yourself visiting the Smoky Mountains in East Tennessee, please join us here at St. Paul Lutheran Church in Sevierville. We see it as a small part of our service to the church to provide sound liturgical worship opportunities for vacationing Lutherans to our area. For worship times and directions, please visit our website at splctn.com. That's splctn.com.
Listen to what you want, when you want. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Our school is committed to authentic Lutheranism, the entire Book of Concord, and indeed to authentic Lutheranism as it has continued to be confessed and practiced through the centuries right up into our own time.
Dr. Cameron McKenzie, chairman of the Department of Historical Theology at Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana.
We're committed then to biblical, confessional Christianity and Lutheranism and applying it to the world of today in as effective a way as we can.
You can find out more about studying for the pastoral ministry at Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, at ctsfw.edu, ctsfw.edu, or call 1-800-481-2155, Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana.
Welcome back to Issues, Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about Jesus, the Good Shepherd, with Dr. Ken Bailey, author of the book, The Good Shepherd, A Thousand-Year Journey, From Psalm 23 to the New Testament. Dr. Bailey, one more question, and it's raised there in that Ezekiel 34 passage, and that is it's an element of judgment on the part of this shepherd. He judges between the fat and the lean sheep, and that, I think, also is reflected in Christ's own description of the judgment at one point between sheep and goats, although the parallel doesn't seem to be quite perfect. How would you enlighten us there?
Well, the very fact of the discussion there in Ezekiel about the fact that he talks about, just a minute, let me get the right page here. Hold on. Yeah, here we go. He talks about the good sheep and the bad sheep. Now, the people, of course, are off as refugees in southern Iraq, what's now southern Iraq in Babylon. And a people who are a refugee people who have been taken by violence away from their home and enslaved somewhere else, the bad guys are always their enslavers. We're the good guys. The bad guys are the Babylonians. Because we have suffered, we are thereby innocent. And that goes, I think, almost universally through any refugee community or any minority community that finds itself in any sense oppressed. Because we are oppressed, because we get beaten up on, because we have a hard time in this society, we are thereby innocent. The bad guys are the people who are beating up on us. And Ezekiel comes along and he says, no way. That is God speaking through Ezekiel. Yes, you are refugees. Yes, you have gotten beaten up. Yes, you were violently brought here as a slave community working for the Babylonians. But among you, there are the more powerful who beat up on the weaker. Among you are the people who drink all the water they want and muddy up the water from those behind them. And they push the others the way they want, and they eat the good grass and leave nothing but something worthless for the weaker ones. He's saying, do not say you are innocent because of what you have suffered. You are also among the bad guys. And thereby, when the shepherd comes, he's going to have to separate out the bad guys and the good guys, because he will find bad guys amongst this community that has suffered and thinks it's innocent thereby, and they aren't. And that's a really, really critical component of the account in Ezekiel that really, it's amazing. It's amazing to find it.
Now, in Zechariah chapter 10, not exclusively, but we are introduced very strongly to the idea of bad shepherds. What would you say of that?
Yeah, okay. It's the same theme that we've had before. The bad shepherds show up also in the prophets, but here in the last of the accounts in the prophets, he really gets, well, Ezekiel spends 10 whole verses telling you how bad the shepherds are, and thereby he's got to come, the good shepherd has to break into history from the outside. In Zechariah, it's much shorter. My anger is hot against the shepherds, and I will punish the leaders. And of course, he's building up to the fact that God has to come himself and bring back the lost. The really interesting thing that happens in Zechariah is that the sheep, always through this literature about the Good Shepherd, who are seen as, we know, sheep, humble, pious, gentle, exposed, not fearsome in any way. And here we're told, no. These people are going to turn into mighty men in battle, the sheep, trampling the foe in the muds of the street, and they shall fight because the Lord is with them, and they shall put to shame the riders on horses. So you're going to have this incredible transformation of sheep are going to turn into special forces that can beat up on anybody. It's amazing to see that happen. Zechariah is the only one who does it. And, of course, they are also lost because the good shepherd has got to come and find them as well.
Turning to the New Testament, also rich with this imagery, Luke 15, I know it's a place that is very near and dear to your heart.
Absolutely.
Given previous conversations with you. Take us into those 10 verses in Luke 15, the connection between the Good Shepherd and the Good Woman, those two parallel parables.
Yeah, well, how much time have you got, Todd? You know, the old long-winded professor can just rattle on and on. I'll try real hard not to do that. The 23rd Psalm gives us a double image. You've got the Good Shepherd, and that's male, and then you've got somebody who prepares a meal. Well, the Good Shepherd is God, and that's a male image, and we don't start using female language, but what God does is the work of a woman. He prepares a meal. This theme of the male and the female drops out in the three prophetic accounts. Jesus brings it back with a vengeance. I think Jesus notices that the male and female components in the 23rd Psalm are missing from the three prophetic accounts of the Good Shepherd. And he says in the back of his head, that's a big mistake because there's a richness in the image that is being lost. And Jesus says, I'm going to see to it that that imagery is not lost again. I'm going to tell one parable about the Good Shepherd and one parable about the Good Woman, and they're going to be side by side. And if you remember one, you'll remember the other, and thereby I will keep alive that double concern that God has for both the male and the female. But getting back to the initial account there in Luke 15, it's really important for us to notice that the audience are the scribes and the Pharisees, and they're not just the scribes and the Pharisees, but there's a strong hint that they are the Haburim. The Haburim was a special crowd among the Pharisees that were called the friends. That's what Haburim means. And the friends were this sort of inner circle of Pharisees who tried very, very hard to follow the law in a very precise fashion. Now, they're upset. We know that they're being hinted at because in the story, the shepherd calls together the friends. That's the name of the club that's sitting in front of him, and he has a party. Anyway, they come mad at Jesus. Now, why? They want to debate food laws. They want to debate tithing. They want to debate ceremonial purity. How do you remain undefiled? And then Sabbath observance. Those are the four issues that they really, they're just a little nervous about this Rabbi Jesus, and he doesn't seem to have the orthodox point of view as regards Orthodox Judaism on these four issues. And Jesus knows that, and he says, I'm not going to directly talk about any of these. I'm going to talk about what a good shepherd does when he loses a sheep. He gets together and he, you know, brings them, goes out and finds it and pays whatever price he has to, and he gets them home and then he has a party. And that's who I am. You want to know why I sit and eat with sinners? I'm the good shepherd going after the lost sheep. As David talked about it, and as Ezekiel and Zechariah and all of these good, and Jeremiah, that's who I am. That's why he tells this incredible story. And, of course, this is electrifying. Not only is he saying, I stand up with the big boys, with the prophets and with David, and retell this story with my slant on it, but I make myself the hero of the story, and the hero of the story is the figure of God. Jesus is saying, I am the divine presence among you.
Dr. Ken Bailey is our guest. We're talking about Jesus, the Good Shepherd. We'll take another break, about another 10 minutes with him on this Thursday afternoon. And then in hour two of Issues, Etc., we'll hear from Dr. Alvin Schmidt, his Making the Case Against Islam back in 2013 at the Issues, Etc. Making the Case Conference. That's hour two of Issues, Etc. in about 15 minutes. Stay tuned.
Martin Luther taught that the chief function of music and worship was the proclamation of the Word of God. With Heirs of the Reformation, Treasures of the Singing Church, you will hear over two centuries of Lutheran musical theology, beautifully performed and faithfully sung. For a limited time, save 10% on this 4-CD set when you use promotional code URA. Simply visit cph.org today. Lutheran Thought, Lutheran Substance, Lutheran Music. Brought to you by Concordia Publishing House.
Do you have a hard time finding Christian greeting cards and gifts that aren't either sappy or theologically suspect? Ad Crucem offers the perfect combination of art and the truth of the Scriptures with beautiful and reverent greeting cards and gifts. Deliver the true comfort of the gospel, Christ crucified for sinners, to family and friends with Ad Crucem. ADCRUCEM.com. Confessing the faith through art and word. ADCRUCEM.com.
Expert guests. Expansive topics. Extolling Christ. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Did you know that you can listen to Issues Etc. 24/7? Check out our website, issuesetc.org, and go to the Listen On Demand page. Listen at the gym, in your kitchen, in your garden, on your iPod, your computer, or in your car. The technology may be new, but the truth never changes. Issues Etc. On Demand audio, available for your convenience at issuesetc.org. 10 hours of new programming each week. issuesetc.org, and click Listen On Demand.
Would you like to help a college or seminary student attend the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference? You can purchase a conference scholarship for a donation of $100 to Issues Etc. To donate online, fill out the registration form at issuesetc.org and insert scholarship in the first name field. Or you can make your $100 check payable to Issues Etc., write scholarship in the memo line, and send it to Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Stanza 4 of the hymn, The King of Love, My Shepherd Is. Dr. Ken Bailey is our guest on this Thursday afternoon. We're talking about Jesus, the Good Shepherd. There's so much in the New Testament here. If you would, could you give us an overview of, say, Mark and Matthew? I do want to focus a little bit in the minutes left to us on John, the Good Shepherd, as one who kind of stands willingly amidst these thieves and wolves, the dangers there. But how would you summarize Mark and Matthew in this respect?
The big deal in Mark 6 is that Herod murders John the Baptist at a banquet, and the banquet thereby turns into a banquet of death. The disciples have been sent out in two by two. They instinctively know that the mission of the 12 is over. They rush back to Jesus. What are we going to do now? John the Baptist is murdered. Obviously, you, Jesus, are going to be next. What do we do? Do we go home? Is it all over? Do we go underground? What are we going to do? And Jesus says, we got to go off in the wilderness and pray and think about this. They get into a boat, they cross the sea, and here's a crowd. And the text says he looked at them and he saw them as sheep without a shepherd. And so then the whole text about the feeding of the 5,000 echoes with different themes in the 23rd Psalm. He leads them and feeds them. It's in the open pastures. He has them lie down in green pastures. They are in the valley of the shadow of death. John has just been killed. He spreads a table before them. My cup runneth over. They have more than enough. He takes charge of the flock. The very next story is about the still waters in the middle of the sea. The whole thing rings of the Good Shepherd. And so in Luke 15, Jesus says, this is what a good shepherd's supposed to do. And in Mark 6, here is Jesus living out the good shepherd and the theme of the good shepherd. He doesn't hide. He doesn't run away. Herod's spies are in the crowd. Dictators always have to watch everybody who gets attention. and they're going to report back to Herod. And the report is Jesus is saying, hey, Herod, you got all the powerful people in the countryside. You had a big party, and you ended up murdering John the Baptist. It was a banquet of death. I've got people from all those same villages, only they're the poor, not the powerful, and we have a banquet of life. And the whole countryside is going to have to choose between the banquet of death, and that's you, and the banquet of life, and that's me. He puts it to him with enormous personal courage, and the whole text rings with that echoing of the 23rd Psalm and the Good Shepherd theme. When we get to Matthew, it's loud and clear that he's talking about not just the lost sheep, but he's also talking about the Good Shepherd and the flock. It's not just an individual, but it's the flock that's lost. And the issue is, if you get a young believer who's struggling and has a hard time and doesn't quite make it and makes mistakes and gets lost, what do you do? Do you say, well, you got to be tough with people like this. He didn't make the grade, leave him alone. And Jesus says, no, we go after these types. And he's got a marvelous little parable in which he's talking about that. He's talking about a model for Christian leadership in the new band of believers that he is creating. And this is how they're supposed to act with members of the community that don't quite make the grade. You treat them as lost sheep, and then you go after them.
With a few minutes here, Jesus adds something here. I lay down my life for the sheep in John chapter 10. That seems pretty important.
That is, nothing could be more critical than that theme. And the theme occurs in the middle, in the beginning. I am the good shepherd. I lay down my life for the sheep in the first verse. And two or three verses later, he repeats it. I am the good shepherd, and I lay down my life for the sheep. But he treats those two phrases like two parts of a hamburger bun. And he slices them in half, and he puts a piece of pickle and a little meat patty and a little bit of tomato in the center. What is the filling of the sandwich between the phrase, I am the good shepherd, and the second phrase, I lay down my life for the sheep? Amazingly, he says, I know my own, and my own know me, as the Father knows me, and I know the Father. Now, what is he saying thereby? He's saying the intimacy between the shepherd, namely Jesus, and the sheep, the believing community, has the potential of being as intimate. To know is a word of intimate connotations in biblical literature, is like the intimacy between Jesus, the Son of God, and God himself. And so, because of the cross, this is in the middle of a discussion of the cross. Because of the cross, there is the potential of intimacy between the believer and Christ that is as rich and profound as the intimacy between God the Father and God the Son. We are drawn into the quality of intimacy in the heart of God because of the cross. The language is simple. The imagery is incredible. This is the point, and one of the Arabic commentators talks about, this is the point at which the commentator lays down his pen and falls into prayer. When folks listening to this, when you get this all sorted out, please send me a letter. I've only been working on this for 40 years, and I really haven't got my mind around it. The intimacy given to us with Christ is like the intimacy between Christ and his divine Father because of the cross.
Dr. Ken Bailey is author and lecturer in Middle Eastern New Testament studies. He spent 40 years living and teaching New Testament in Egypt, Lebanon, Jerusalem, and Cyprus. He's author of several books, including his latest, The Good Shepherd, A Thousand-Year Journey from Psalm 23 to the New Testament. You'll find a link to this new book, and I highly recommend you read it under the Listen On Demand page at issuesetc.org. Dr. Bailey, it is always a pleasure. Thank you so much for the book and for your conversation today.
It's my privilege, Todd. Thank you for letting me talk about this, which is a very deep, passionate concern of mine, as you can tell.
In Hour 2 of Issues Etc., we'll go back to a presentation from 2013 at the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference. Dr. Alvin Schmidt making the case against Islam. We'll hear the entire presentation from the 2013 Making the Case Conference in Hour 2 of Issues Etc. You see what is going on here. This is self-revelation. This is Christ in the Old Testament speaking as the shepherd of his people and making all the same promises that he comes to fulfill in his incarnation, in his life, in his suffering, in his death, in his cross. And there in the New Testament saying, all that I promised in the Old Testament to the people of old, all that I said through the prophets back then about who I am and who I will be for my people, I have come. Here it is. I have arrived. I am the good shepherd, the one that I promised so long ago, the one who I was so long ago for the Old Testament people, and I have come finally to lay down my life for the sheep and take it up again in my resurrection. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
When you need a friend, you have a friend in Jesus Christ, the Good Shepherd, and friends among his people at Good Shepherd Lutheran Church, Arnold, Missouri. At Good Shepherd Lutheran Church, we offer Christ-centered word and sacrament ministry, inspirational liturgical worship services, and faithful preaching and teaching. Sunday worship services are at 9 a.m. Sunday school and Bible class are at 10:30. We also have an excellent Christian preschool. We invite you to join us. Good Shepherd Lutheran Church, 2211 Tenbrook Road, Arnold, Missouri, 636-296-1292.
Did you know that Luther Academy has been providing continuing education for confessional Lutheran pastors and laypeople worldwide for more than 20 years? Luther Academy publishes Logia, the Confessional Lutheran Dogmatics series, and Luther Digest. Find out more about Luther Academy and sign up to receive their free email newsletter at lutheracademy.com, lutheracademy.com, and like them on Facebook, facebook.com/Luther Academy.